Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, of course, we're continuing the UFO Files from the Angel Hotel, the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. We have fellow radio hosts here. In fact, we're both on Pioneer Radio. Rob Simone, how are you?
How you doing, Jerry? It's great to be here.
A pretty interesting conference, huh?
Well, I'll tell you something about this conference. I've talked to a lot of people about what goes on here. Some folks, they don't like the stigma of a UFO conference. So I suggested to them they should say they're going to a science and technology conference. And it indeed is that, but it's also a spiritual retreat. So if you can imagine those two put together, that's the experience you get here at Laughlin.
And you got a good point about that, and they do have a wide variety of subjects and guests that they cover, just like your radio show.
Well, my show, as you know, is also on the Pioneer Radio Network, and it has been going for 2 years. It's a bit of a Cinderella story, actually. It is on London's premier independent radio station. The station itself has no big corporate sponsors. It's not owned by a big corporation like Clear Channel. It's not under any government control or any religious affiliation. In fact, it's predominantly a music station, run by the London Musicians Collective. And I was living in London for a year, and when I first got there, I was made aware of all the radio stations, and I was in radio for a few years before that. This radio station was just starting up. I got in touch with them, and then the whole thing started to really unfold, because the station grew in popularity. It filled a niche that wasn't there in London. And my show, being 2 hours of alternative information, much like Coast to Coast and other shows, really set people off. We had write-ups in The Guardian and the Daily Mail, and they were really responded to it because there's nothing else like it on the airwaves in the UK.
Now, I hear you're hanging around Philadelphia these days. Tell me why.
Oh, right. Well, the first year, we did it right out of London and interviewed all the greats in London, Omar Fowler, David Icke, the people who are novels, Andy Thomas, and Next Magazine, Marcus Allen, all the great people in ufology in England. But I was just coming off a world tour, so I had been out of the country for about 3 years, moved back to Philadelphia, and been producing it there for the past year, which is great. Because now I'm focusing on all the very interesting people in America.
Yeah, I noticed on your lineup you have some of the similar guests that we do as well. As you really get into some pretty interesting subjects. Any trends you've noticed since you started doing this show? It seems to me it's getting a little more spiritual.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think you're probably as aware as I am that when you go down the road of ufology, you invariably end up in exploring many different disciplines. If you're into UFOs, and that means you're into consciousness, and that means you're into comparative religion and philosophy and alternative archaeology and quantum mechanics. All these different disciplines have a place under the very large umbrella of ufology. Now, as far as spirituality goes, it seems to run hand in hand, because if you're exploring your consciousness, if you're exploring a greater reality, that namely extrasolar life, you can't help but to incorporate that into some form of spirituality. And nowadays it's becoming more and more clear that we are not alone. And so what people are wanting to do is take this new information. They know that there are ETs out there. Perhaps they were involved in seeding life on this planet. Perhaps not. Perhaps they're abducting people. They want to be able to take this reality and put it together with their own religion, say Christianity. So what we're, I think, trying to do sometimes, at least some guests that I talk to, are trying to help people take this new information and set it against a cosmic backdrop so they can still be Christians. They don't have to really upset the apple cart too much, but they can go on with this new reality that we're probably not alone.
In fact, this is a trend I've noticed has been building steam. When I first got into this years ago, basically it was, maybe I was limited in my thinking, Rob, but I just kind of thought of, spaceships from someplace else, aliens, big deal. I mean, let's cover that story. never thought of the other ramifications, but you're right that they have mixed it with religion.
Yep.
Pretty well.
Well, because there's good reason to. I just spoke to a gentleman named Matthew Hurley, who has a great collection of artwork throughout the Middle Ages.
We had Matthew on a previous show. Interesting fellow. He's from England or Wales, I guess. Actually.
He's from Wales. And he points out that from the cave paintings to prehistoric to the Middle Ages, all the way up to maybe a few hundred years ago, there has been very clear artwork done by established artists that show UFOs and show correlations between UFOs and Jesus on the cross, and especially the Virgin Mary. I can't tell you how many countless photos or frescoes in churches and cathedrals throughout Europe that depict the crucifixion or the Virgin Mary and these strange UFOs very clearly present in the background.
I notice in many of our interviews that we do, this keeps coming to the forethought, not only a Christian religion, but even other religions, they seem to have a connection. And I think a little bit of it is man wanting to make the two connections, and then maybe there's something to it.
Hmm. Well, we know we've been seeing strange things in our skies as long as, since 1947. And what is to say that the ancients didn't see them as well? The chances are they probably did, and they are demonstrated in their culture, whether it be hieroglyphics or the clay tablets of Sumeria.
We're talking with Rob Simone, well-known radio personality in this field, and Rob is our guest here for the hour, and we're talking about some of the things that both of us have covered over the years. And one of the things I would like to ask you, Rob, right off the bat, because I have always been intrigued by the great surprise of the guest. And one of my great surprises was one time many years ago when I was rather innocent in this field. I didn't know what the heck a Chandler was. And my producer, I didn't come in the station until late at night in Las Vegas. And it was when we were doing a syndicated show out of there. And I said, "We got a Chandler tonight." And I said, "Big deal. What's that about?" So this fellow sits over in the corner, and he turns ashen gray, and all of a sudden starts talking in this other strange voice, and he's from Orion or someplace. And you must remember here, I'm a pretty naive at this point. It was a great show. In other words, have you had anything stand out in your radio history of interviewing that like that that you'd like to share with the audience?
Right. Well, channeling is a pretty big field. And it would seem that there's pretty good evidence that has been with us for quite a long time. You know, back in King Arthur days, there was always someone that the court took counsel in, and oftentimes their information was channeled. And who's to say some of the other great texts or even religious texts were not channeled in some way? But I'll tell you a little story about Adrian de Vere. He is from Israel.
Yeah, and frankly, we talked about Adrian the other day. He was here, and, you know, he has his medical ET doctor.
Right. Did you interview him?
Not yet.
Okay, great. Well, I hope you have him on, but I'll give you a little taste because it really crystallizes somebody who is involved in channeling. He didn't know he was a channeler. He was just a computer software engineer. One day, he started hearing these voices. He didn't tell anybody about it. But when he started to ask questions about these voices, they told him things that no one else could. Slowly but surely, he sought some help, found out he went to a medium, found out he was a channel, and these extraterrestrials were coming through him and helping him heal people. And now he's set up these hospitals whereby these entities, unseen, help people. So we were here at this conference yesterday. I said, "Adrian, I'd like to interview you." We went up to my studio, and I just have just a small, simple setup. It's quite sparse. He was there, and I was there, and that was it. We're the only two people in the room. We started talking, and I asked him about these entities that he's surrounded with, and I asked him if they were in the room with us right now, and he said they were. And I asked him to describe who was around at the time. He told me that it was just me and him, but also he's always accompanied by 11 security guards. These are very ugly-looking aliens with weapons in their hands. And there was also ET media that were watching in. So now I thought, great, I've got 11 people in the room and only one microphone. So I started to carry on, and as I was talking to him, he was channeling the answers that I was asking, because I asked him about the one world government and the New World Order, and I asked him about different conspiracies and how life started on this earth. And I'll tell you what, do I really know where the information was coming from? No. But was the information thoughtful, dynamic, and very intellectual? Yes. So, what can we say? If it's true or not, we can definitely draw some sort of value from it.
Right. When I was talking about channeling, I was in no way putting it down. I just was not been familiar with it, and it was pretty incredible, the experience, until I began to get acquainted in that. You've had many of the same guests I've had on, and what's your conclusion, or maybe you're like me, you still don't have a conclusion, about the ET presence, period?
Right. Well, you're right. It's funny, we're two radio talk show hosts interviewing each other. This is a first, perhaps. But I'll tell you, that idea, that question struck me about 8 months ago. And I decided to do something about it. I wrote a book called Cosmic Interview, where I took different segments and different portions of all these amazing interviews that I've done and you've done as well, and put some sort of coherent form to it. And I tell you, the inclusions in this are people like Sir Lawrence Gardner talking about monatomic gold and the mysteries of the Bible, and David Icke talking about the globalization and how more and more of the world's power is falling into fewer and fewer hands. And of course, the biggie to ufology. You can take from all these amazing interviews a theme. And being in the center of all of them, I feel as though I was able to distill a large portion of the field into a really concise format.
Is your book available yet?
It's in the process of being published.
When it does get published, you need to let us know. We want to start pushing that book. You know, talk show host, we push books a lot.
I hear that. You know, I'm beginning.
You've heard about that.
I'm beginning to understand that. It's a lot of fun too. I mean, I don't know if your experience is the same as mine, but we never really find the bottom of it, do we? It's just it's a fascinating intellectual, spiritual, and emotional journey.
Yeah, one thing leads to another and leads to another, and just when you should be getting a conclusion, you got a whole new path to take.
That's true. It's something that I think people should go into not expecting answers per se, not expecting to find the end of the road, because it really is all about the journey, and the journey is the fun part. And I will tell you something, coming here, meeting you, meeting the other folks, it brings this field to life. It's one thing to read the magazines and maybe even enjoy a movie or two, but if you actually put your foot into it, pick up a set of dowsing rods, try to meditate, try to open yourself up, that's when all the stuff really starts to hit home and you can really open up your consciousness. You don't have to believe in anything. Just give it a try.
Try it. You might like it. That's a good idea. We're talking with Rob Simone, and of course he's a talk show host of note, international as well. And Rob, one of the things that I've always been asked every time I do an interview with somebody else is they say, well, who's your favorite interview? And I don't really have anybody necessarily a top guy, but I know in this field I do like to talk a lot to like Bud Hopkins, and I'll leave somebody out and alienate them. There's a fellow named Bill Hamilton. I don't know if you've had Bill on or not.
Yeah, I have spoken to Bill. He's remarkable. He's the true one of the leading lights in ufology. He's been around for a long time. Just the grand old masters of ufology.
He has some great stories, and they're backed up with his investigations. And he started out with Skywatch International, and I had him on here recently, and we were talking about some more revelations about Area 51. You would think there would be everything that you'd want to know about that place, and you keep hearing new things all the time.
Oh, right. I don't know if you covered this, but Bill Hamilton, when he came on my program, we did talk about Area 51, but more importantly, we talked about a gentleman named Dr. Dan who used to work in Area 51 that Bill's been in contact with.
Right, and he's coming clean.
He is, although I don't know, if you're working in that world, I think you can never truly get completely clean.
Yeah, in fact, it is incredible, incredible stories telling there and about J-Rod. And
right, right. Again, one of the most spectacular stories, paradigm shifts. What we're talking about here are the most important things in the world. When these things come to light and they're shown to be true, they will change everything we once thought to held to be true. So in that regard, what we talk about, the guests we have on our program, are really talking about the most important things in the world.
You know, the interesting thing about J-Rod that I found about this living entity that supposedly we have up in Area 51 in captivity, may be gone by now. It may have got to go home. Is that he had a great sense of humor and did impressions.
J-Rod, I think he had just had a Encyclopedia Galactica in his head.
And he could actually do anybody probably from John Wayne to Madonna if he wanted to.
Yeah, probably so.
So you know, there's interesting little sidelights to these stories that come out all the time.
But going back to your question, there are some people who stick out in my mind who I've interviewed, like Jim Mars. He's
one of my favorite people, by the way, and he started in this business as a kid in Mississippi, being the yo-yo champion of Mississippi. Did you know that?
I did not, sir.
Well, you can use that the next time you talk to Jim, getting softening him up real fast.
Yeah, I'll next time I talk to him, I'll tell him about that one. That's a good one. And invariably, I'll tell him where it came from.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. But he combines this easygoing, laid-back Texas gentleman, Southern accent, with the most clear, concise, and thorough journalism that you'll find anywhere. So he has a really soft delivery, and he has really hard evidence. So he's one of my favorites. Also,
The thing about Jim Mars is he's an excellent, excellent researcher and investigative reporter.
He's one of the world's best. He has done so much in the areas of ufology, conspiracy, JFK, and his new book really focuses on 9/11. The thinking is that there's much more to that picture than meets the eye, and if anybody's going to get to the bottom of it, it's probably going to be Jim Mars.
We're not going to get into the political ramifications of it other than there are some unanswered questions and nobody wants to answer them.
Right. I had Janine Garofalo on my program several weeks ago, and she said something, she put it this way, that 9/11 was one of the worst things to happen to this country. But the second worst thing to happen was for it to occur during the Bush administration. Because in her words, she felt that they used 9/11 and they surgically attached it to go into Iraq. And it had nothing to do with it in the first place. And she felt that it was compounded by the current folks in office. And
I'm inclined to agree with her, but I would say the worst thing that happened in the United States was the reaction to 9/11 and then 9/11 itself. I think we're a lot better, a lot worse off than we were. And the only good example I can think of, and I don't want, like I say, it's not a political show, is that thank God the plane didn't land in the House or the Senate or both, because then we'd have martial law, and who knows what would have happened.
Oh, I know. It's really something that, as I say, Jim Mars is written another book about. And I haven't read it yet, but once I do, I'd be interested to find out what he thinks, because I do respect his opinion.
Well, he thinks there's something rotten in Denmark. He points out, for instance, the debris field was 8 miles long going into the crash in Pittsburgh, and how can that be if it's crashed head-on? There was an F-16 near there, ever seen by the public, and the thing that always bothered me about a 9/11, and we'll go into some other things, because it's not, you know, the subject of the show is cell phones. I understand, have a tough time working if over 2,500 feet and going 250 miles an hour or more, and you had all these people calling on cell phones. Now, the airport phones work, but I'm not so sure our cell phones do.
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer for that. I don't know how that happened. It could have been a quirk that did happen that day or whatever. Anyway, Jim really covers all of that in great detail in his book. And some of your other favorite artists.
Well, let's see. There's so many different fields of study that people I've spoken with.
Well, that leads me to maybe something I'd like to know from you, Rob. Have you got a favorite subject in this area, or do you like it all?
That's a great question. I got into ufology many years ago. I'm going to give you the long-winded version answer to this question. I started out in music and wrapped that up and went out to Sedona, Arizona, and started working with Peter Gersten.
I know Peter, and in fact, our producer for the shows here, Nancy McKinney, is from Sedona.
Okay. And because I was listening to Art Bell, and I thought, well, I'm going to go and volunteer my services for however long it takes. And I thought, well, I'll go volunteer for Richard C. Hoagland, because I liked some of the thing he was doing. Unfortunately, it was the time of the Miami Circle, and he had just suffered a heart attack. So I got in touch with Peter, told him that I was a paralegal.
We have something in common. I worked as a paralegal at one time.
Really? You know, it's funny. I went through the training, and I did quite well, but I never pursued it as a career. I just thought it was something good to know. It's good to have that background. So I went out, as I say, and started working with Peter Gersten. I became the world's first paranormal paralegal.
That's a good title. I like that. Rob Simone, paranormal paralegal et al.
Yep. It really was that. And I got in contact with Peter. And, as you know, I don't know if people realize that, but at the time, this was back in the late 90s, Pete was going on Art Bell every week. And he was bringing lawsuits against the DOG for information about the extraterrestrial cover-up. And I thought that was a very pragmatic approach to this very, you know, mysterious field. He was exhausting all legal remedies. It's something that anybody that's interested in exploring this phenomenon would think that it's a pretty pragmatic approach. So working with him was fantastic. I helped collect affidavits from people who had seen things. Helped him prepare his cases against the government. He had more than one court appearances. And that exposed me to the whole field of ufology and the whole range of things that I was just learning at the time. So since then, I have gone around the world exploring international ufology, a whole world tour from every country, small and big, and getting people on the ground, their stories, their mythology, their folklore, as it related to, well, paranormal and ET issues. And then from there, I was able to draw upon a very wide range of information. So my favorite area, I guess, has to do with the human experience as it relates to the ET issue. Because not only do we explore things in my program just about philosophy and about science, it's all fascinating, but it seems to me the biggest question that still is not answered for a large group of folks is that, are we alone, and what does that mean for us?
You know, you're talking about the legal ramifications of all of this. I know you know Stephen Bassett, and they've been trying for a long time to get into a lot of these things from the government. What do you think about the Disclosure Project, for instance? I wonder if that, do you think they'll ever work, or do you think if the government just has too deep of pockets to fight something like this?
Okay, do you mean, you talk about Stephen Bassett, are you talking about Stephen Greer's disclosure?
Well, I'm talking about Stephen Bassett and Stephen Greer. Stephen Greer's project, but just one thing went to the other. They've worked very closely together.
Yeah, I know what you're asking there. Stephen Bassett is, of course, he was the first UFO lobbyist to register on that issue. And Stephen Bassett's disclosure project,
Stephen Greer, kind of was ramrodding that, but I mean, they just kind of go hand in hand in my ideas, even though Stephen Bassett himself actually ran for Congress at one time.
He did. And as I say, Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project was something that I heard listening on shortwave radio on the BBC. I was somewhere in Thailand at the time, and it actually made the BBC international broadcast. Now, this is an approach that has to be taken. Anybody who's seriously interested in disclosure has to gather the proper evidence. And in this case, people who have worked in the military or the government and had direct experience are those sorts of folks that you have to have come forward. So for many people, it's the smoking gun. When you have that many credentials up there talking about their similar experiences, we know that there's a phenomenon. Anyone who looks at Rendlesham knows that something happened, and it's ongoing. Stephen Greer is now actively looking for and has found a free energy device. It is an uphill battle. What he is doing, and in some cases what you and I are doing, are going up against the most powerful forces on the planet, taking on the energy concerns, taking on this cabal that runs everything, the wealthy families, the international bankers. We are the David and Goliath. I liken this struggle, actually, to the civil rights movement of the 50s.
We got an interesting point about that, because you are going up against the establishment, and just like his free energy device, not many people know about that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, if you look at the civil rights movement in the 50s, they were right in what they were marching for. They were right in what they stood for. However, it took a long time for the rest of this country to wake up to that. And people in this movement, people looking to end this gigantic conspiracy and cover-up, are right in what they're doing. They're right in their information. And slowly but surely, the rest of this country is going to have to be dragged into this reality. It's not going to be easy. And we are going to lose a few people. We already have lost a few people to this cause. As you know, sometimes people can be at the wrong place at the wrong time or have too much information, and we never hear from them again. So it's very much like the civil rights movement, because it is something that is dangerous to some, and many people in power will fight very hard against those who seek the truth.
Right. There's something about retaining power, and we've done that in all kinds of talk shows, not only UFOs, but all kinds of things, trying to expose people. Even people who are not directly connected with it will see it as a threat to their position. So they're kind of ally with the wrong side, as far as I'm concerned. That's one of the big battles. You probably got it right when you call it David and Goliath.
It is. We are small in number, but strong in spirit.
Well, Stephen Bassett has this big convention coming up in April. The X Conference will be on the 15th, I think, of April, and the 16th, somewhere along in there. We have it on our website, and he hopes really to cause some attention from the government sources. In fact, this is where he's going. He's aiming this conference at the fact of putting pressure on Congress and bureaucrats and the media.
It's true. Stephen reckons that this ET issue is like a 900-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wants to acknowledge. And moreover, it's actually warping the government, because what the Congress knows and the funding that is required to maintain this black military-industrial corporate complex is pulling each other in different directions. So it's actually having a very negative effect on the Congress and the Senate, and it's warping the government, as Stephen says, and it has to be, in his mind, ended at some point, just so this whole process can carry on, because invariably it's going to boil over. So the people that have a hand in suppressing this, he thinks, might be on the verge of slowly turning around and letting loose some of this information, simply just not to let it boil over.
Well, and it's been going on now for a while, so a lot of people, they can say, you know, in politics, if they can say, well, it's somebody else's fault and they passed away or they're no longer in control, it's much easier.
You know, that's an interesting point. I was talking to Bob Dean last night, and he said something very poignant, that a new paradigm comes on one funeral at a time. So he might be right in that it's just going to have to take the deaths of certain people, or people to leave office, or people simply just to go away before the information or before the freedom or the new thinking is allowed to emerge.
Well, Rob Simone, we certainly hope you don't go away in any of those ways, because you've got a very interesting show, and we look forward to watching it grow and go on other stations, and look forward to another fun interview.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. It's always great to talk to you. I've heard you, and it's a pleasure meeting you. I just want to say thanks to everybody and give a little shout out to the station I'm on. I'm on Resonance FM in London. And we hope that we can talk again sometime, because there's a lot more ground between us yet to cover.
It certainly is. We could go on for hours and hours and hours. And you're on, I believe, on Saturday mornings and Sunday evenings on Pioneer.
Yeah, Pioneer, Sunday and Monday evenings. And, of course, we're live Saturday morning.
Thank you very much for being on the show with us, Rob Simone. This is Jerry Pittman. You're listening to the UFO Files. And next, we have a lady here in Laughlin at the Flamingo at the UFO conference, who has been in the UFO business for over 50 years at least. You were telling me you're 80-something. So stand by. That'll be coming up next.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the Internet, one stop fits all at jerrypippin.com.
Oh, Jane, you remember the Italian place?
Where we had that homemade ravioli.
Oh, that was so good. The salad with the prosciutto.
Oh, that pesto dressing was out of this world.
Croutons. Oh, yes.
So good.
Oh, let's eat there.
Where was that?
I don't remember.
Well, what was it called?
Oh, it was so good, too. What was it called?
What was it?
Ooh, look at this. Homemade biscotti.
Let me see the ad.
Ooh, and fresh pasta.
Hey, let's go there instead.
Out of sight, out of mind. Don't let the world forget about you. Advertise. A message from the Radio Advertising Bureau, Adweek Magazine, this radio station, and the famous Radio Ranch.
We're broadcasting the UFO Files from the Flamingo Hotel in Laughlin, Nevada. And Dr. Aluti Francesca is here with us, and you've been dealing in this subject forever.
Well, it would seem like it most of my life.
I can only say that to you because I've been doing it for a while, too.
Uh-huh. Most of my life, yes.
Now, you have a newsletter that's very interesting, and people can actually subscribe to this newsletter, and you have a phone number and address and things like that. And let's talk a little bit about it right now in front, and then at the end of the interview, we'll do it again so people can have a chance to get a pen and pencil and write. Okay.
It's a quarterly newsletter. It's called Starcraft News. And it's $25 a year subscription. Our address is 7700 Avenue of the Sun, White City, Oregon, 97503. And our phone number is 541-855-1956.
I like that Avenue of the Sun. It sounds like they named the street just for you.
Uh-huh.
Well, tell us a little bit about the StarCraft newsletter. What would somebody find in it?
I do an editorial, and some of my research, like I was in London last year, and I met some other people and talked with some people from Greece who'd had contacts. We had that in our summer issue. Also, a lot of the material in there is the material I received through telethought communication.
Well, let's talk
space people.
Let's talk a little bit about the space people. You've had lots of experience in therapy, regression therapy.
I work with people in regression therapy. That's my consultation service.
And what was the most astounding thing that jumps out at you, Dr. Francesca, over the years? Have the stories changed, or they've been basically the same? Or I guess there's a thousand different things.
I've regressed over 3,000 people since 1975, and it's hard to say. There have been some very dramatic past life regressions that I've worked with, some that were very, very ordinary. They always say the criticism of reincarnation is, oh, everybody's always been someone famous, but they haven't. I remember, to turn it around a little, one of the most boring regressions I ever did was with a guy up in Seattle who remembered every detail of his last life, which was a very ordinary life in a little shack somewhere like in Nebraska. He could see the nail holes, he could walk through the little shack. To him it was fascinating. To me it was 2 hours of sheer boredom.
Boring with a capital B.
It was so real. It was so real to him. He was there. He was reliving it completely.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about reliving some of these things. How many times do you think we are reincarnated, or is there a number?
I don't think there is a number. I've worked with people that have gone back to Atlantis, to other planets. I think most people have had thousands of lives.
So basically, when you said other planets, it's just not Earth-bound lives.
No, not most of them. People I've regressed have had lives on this planet, but a few have gone to other planetary systems and tried to describe them, and it's very difficult for them to put that memory into this context.
And the first time this happened to you, you said you did over 3,000. This had to catch you by surprise. About maybe they were from another planet, or maybe they didn't, because you've been in this field for a while.
No, I was experimenting. First, I had someone who was trained work with regressing me, and I remembered things that I did not remember 5 minutes before the session, which surprised me. And then when I started working with people, I had a Doctor of Spiritual Science degree, but I found I had a natural ability to get people into an alpha state and have them remember and relive the life.
You talked about your personal experiences yourself. How many times do you think you've been around?
Well, I have gone into, I think, 12 past lives at this point, and mine go back to Atlantis, Egypt, Rome, Greece, Elizabethan England.
So they've all been Earthbound experiences?
Oh, I've come from another planet, but I'm talking about the ones that I was working with.
I'm going to ask you, which one? The planet.
I think I'm connected to Saturn. A lot of my communications come from Saturn Command.
And when you get these communications, exactly how does that work?
I sit down with a group of people, my own inner group usually, at a specific time, once every 2 weeks or so, and have a tape recorder. And tune in, and within 1 minute or less, if the communication's coming in, a title flashes into my mind. I don't hear this, remember. It's purely telethought. And then I start speaking one word after another, and the communication, which is 20 or 30 minutes, comes through, signs off, and that's it. They started in Santa Barbara in 1958.
And do you remember that first time?
Yes, vividly. My husband at that time, my American husband, and I were experimenting with a light beam communicator, which some of the Solar Cross group had been working with in Los Angeles. We were in Santa Barbara, and at that time we had been experimenting for weeks and receiving nothing on the light beam, and suddenly a whole chunk of information, a paragraph, flashed into my mind. And I spoke it, and I said to Ken, my husband at that time, I said, I don't know where that's come from, and I don't want to get it that way. I want to get it mechanically. And the next time we worked, more came in, and again I was protesting. He said, look, the light beam's not working, but you are, so we're switching to you.
That's an interesting story. And what were some of those first communications?
The first one I've always remembered, because I have a feeling it's coming back to this same time now. It was about something was going to happen in the ionospheric layer of our planet. My husband was studying and had a degree in science, and I said to him, what's the ionospheric layer? At that time, back in 58, I had no idea. And he said, oh, it's making sense, just keep
basically, when you talk about these lives, previous lives, you said you've had at least 12, so let's talk about your experience first, if it's okay. What is the goal overall as far as reincarnation, the way you see it? I mean, I keep hearing things like, you know, well, you have to do it 99 times and on and on and on to become more perfect. Is that basic?
No. The way I work with regression consultations is therapeutic. It's to find out why you have the problems or the hang-ups in the present. Going back on your time track to where those problems originated, how you set them up through guilt or whatever it was, and then reprogram in the subconscious mind a new pattern. That's how I work, and it's very successful.
Do people have to show up there on the valley of the sun, the street of the sun, or whatever the name of that street was, or can they call you and get this therapy, or how does it work?
Oh, I'm up in the hills. They'd never find me. It's up a 2-mile rock road, 20 miles out from Medford. They have to call me and set up a private consultation.
I mean, do you do it on the phone or?
Oh no, you can't regress someone on the phone. You have to have them there for 2 hours lying on a couch, and I have to monitor them and I have to feel very close to them. I wouldn't dream of doing it on, it's not a psychic reading.
Well, it's the reason I was asking is basically people would, when they contact you, they'd have to be prepared to come up there.
Yes, very definitely.
And
so work with people on tour when I'm lecturing or when I'm on tour.
Are you still touring a lot, or are you taking it easy these days?
I haven't been, but last year I was in London and Devon in England, where I grew up, was born for 3 weeks, and I did some regressions there, and I'm planning on doing more work this year again.
Are you planning on going back to England or someplace else?
Maybe Turkey. I don't know. But certainly England too.
Why Turkey?
Well, because I met the gentleman who from Turkey at this congress who was lecturing, and he was talking of them doing conventions or congresses, and I gave him my material and said I'd be interested. So I'm hoping.
Well, good. You may end up in Turkey. You'll have to let us know. Now, do we have a phone number that we can give out, or do they just basically write to you?
They can do either. They can write to me. I don't have my email up and running at the moment, but I'm going to. But the address, again, is 7700 Avenue of the Sun, White City, Oregon, 97503. The phone number is 541-855-1956.
We'll be back with Dr. Francisca in just a moment. We're going to pause for this commercial word, and when we come back, I want to talk to her about previous lives and previous loves, if that really exists, or we run across the same people or whatever.
Prince Anthony was the handsomest man in the entire kingdom.
Man, am I handsome?
His fondest wish was to find a beautiful bride.
Of course, she doesn't have to be as stunning as me.
But Prince Anthony couldn't find one. Why? Well, because he never left the palace.
Being this pretty isn't easy.
He spent all day lifting weights and getting his back waxed. And trimming and grooming and tweezing and plucking.
Perfecting perfection.
Meanwhile, his less good-looking but far more charming brother Benji found a bride. So did his rather unattractive cousins and even his flat-out butt-ugly Uncle Stanley.
I don't understand it. I am way better looking than any of them.
Unfortunately, none of the women in the kingdom knew this because none of them had ever seen him.
Not if they ever did.
But they didn't. So Prince Anthony spent his entire life all alone until he was old and toothless, bald and fat, saggy and rather flabby.
At least my back isn't very hairy.
You may have the best product or service in the world, but if nobody knows about it, you just have the best product or service in the world. It's called advertising, and it works. Your competitors know this. Why don't you? This message brought to you by this station, Adweek Magazine, the Radio Advertising Bureau, and the famous Radio Ranch.
Dr. Francisco, tell me about previous lives and previous loves. You say we keep running across the same people, is that right?
Oh, definitely. Two things bring people together, great love and great hate.
And so they keep coming across each other.
Yeah, the hate, they have to work out the love. That's when you find an ideal marriage, a marriage that they recognize each other the minute they meet and they just are together the rest of their life.
So, say I found this ideal mate.
Soulmate.
Yes, if I say I found her, and would it be, and in the next life, will we run across each other again, or is that likely?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You come together time after time after time with this great love.
So, love conquers all, for sure, time and space.
In the end, yes.
And they say there's a very close correlation with love and hate, and you say anger or hate actually...
If you hate somebody very, very much, you have to come back and work that out with them. There's not only personal love and personal hate, there's race, what's called race karma, like the Jews and the Arabs, the Irish and the English, they keep coming back often in that same race to work out that same situation.
So in other words, ultimately, there will be harmony between these people that are now natural enemies.
Ultimately, hopefully, yes, we're into the...
You said hopefully, so we don't know for sure. Huh?
Well, I guess lately things have been pretty horrible.
In fact, the world seems like it's going a little backwards.
Well, we're at the end of a 26,000-year major cycle, and as we come into this last 8 years, it's supposed to end around 2012, it's got very, very intense, and it will right through until it winds up.
What happens in 2012?
We should move into the more etherealized fourth dimensional state.
And will that just kind of happen overnight, or is there a transgression, you know, a little period of time where it takes place? We, of course, got Dr. Francesca a glass of water here. You've been talking to a lot of people all day, so you... We finally got it.
Thank you. Ask me that.
Well, the transition of the 2012, is it going to just be like a light turning on and everything?
I am trying to research that intensely. I've listened to a lot of the lectures here to see where their material correlates with mine. I think there will be an event. Exactly what that event is, I am not sure, and I haven't found anyone else that's sure.
It'll be an event that will bring people together, or?
No, it will be an event like a great light, a great manifestation of the God force, which my space contacts call our Radiant One, which will manifest itself and change everything in the twinkling of an eye. It could be any time between now and 2012.
So the correlations between that and even conventional religious stories is somewhat matching.
Mm-hmm.
And so you talked about the space people. Let's talk about them for a minute.
Okay.
What is this all about? When did you first get a contact from them?
That was the work I began
in Santa Barbara.
58 in Santa Barbara, that I had been researching and lecturing about space beings from when I was in England, and I grew up in England. So I've been in this field since about 18 or 19, and let's see, when did
it seems to me that the English are a little more open about this than we are, or is that not true?
Well, when we were meeting at Desmond Leslie's apartment, Desmond Leslie, who co-authored the book with Adamski, Flying Saucers Have Landed, that was in 52. And things were not that ridiculed then. I mean, it seems to me things were more open.
An interesting thing about all of this is the space people, for a better term, lack of a better term, are they still in communication with you?
Oh, yes. The material in my newsletter, which, as I said, we publish quarterly, a lot of that material I receive by telethought from them and share with the people who are our subscribers.
Has the message changed over the years? Or is it basically just bringing forth more validation?
It's more detailed. It deals with conditions that are imminent or that are happening to people on the planet. Like recently, there's been a tremendous amount of things hitting people. Everyone I've talked to has had some extreme experiences. One lady had what appeared to be two strokes. I had something I'd never had in my life last October. I had violent nosebleeds, like hemorrhaging, not just an ordinary. I've never had a nosebleed before or since. A lot of frequencies are changing around the planet, and that is affecting people, particularly people who are sensitive. And it's very difficult at this time for many of us.
The violent nosebleeds, did they just go away finally, or what happened? I mean, what caused
it?
Did they get your attention, or what?
Oh, no. It was just my body reacting to, I think, to the changed frequency. But what actually happened was we had temperatures in the hundreds and 90s right through till the end of October, which is most unusual.
Say for up there in around Medford, that's a little unusual.
Very. And it had been 109 the day after I flew back from England. And here it was extremely hot. And then within a 24-hour period, it dropped from 92 to 29.
And I understand what you're saying, right? It happened within 2 days.
Within 48 hours. And we had no rain. This is right near the end of October. We'd had no rain. And I came home from my yoga classes, and I found a message on my machine. And it said, "Aludhi, I hope you've got home. We have a fire on our hill." And I rushed out. It was bitterly, bitterly cold. It must have been about 26 then. It was about 8 o'clock at night. And there were flames just pouring out of two big pine trees across the meadow where there were some other houses. And I normally am very good in emergencies, and I wasn't. I just started shaking like a leaf. We've had to evacuate twice with forest fires in the years I've lived up there. And I just started shaking, and I remember saying, "Oh God, no, please, no, not again. Please, we don't have to evacuate. And I rushed back in the house. I was shivering with cold. Called my neighbors across the road, and they said, well, you might need to pack, but we think we're okay. They had cut down the two flaming trees within the next half an hour, and the two trailers burnt to the ground. And the little kids and the mothers just got out, and just like that. And I went back in, gathered my pussycats. I have five beautiful pussycats whom I dearly love in my arms. And I curled up on the couch and I said, I guess we're okay, kids. And the next morning, I had this workshop I was going to. One of my hobbies is sewing, and for the first time in my life, I treated myself to a sewing workshop. I got there about an hour and a half after I got there, I just realized my nose is bleeding. And I thought, I wonder what happened, and it wouldn't stop, and I remember rushing in the restroom, and it was pouring with blood, not just, you know, like a little nosebleed. And I thought, my God, what happened to me? And one of the nurses came in who was at the seminar, and they tried to help me. And eventually we got it stopped. Then I went back in an hour and a half later, just before lunch, same thing happened. I went tearing back in the restroom, and the nurses are saying, you know, she's losing a lot of blood. And I've never had an ordinary nosebleed in my life. And so we finally got it stopped again. Then I called my friends who live on the mountain. I said, I don't know what's happened to me, but maybe you better drive into town and drive me home. I don't know. I don't think it's safe for me to drive. And they drove me home, lit my wood fire. It was still bitterly cold. And within a few minutes of getting home, it started again.
Your nose bleeds.
Really, really bad, and we got it stopped again, and I've never had any problems since or before. It was very strange.
Now, you mentioned that frequencies are changing. Explain to our audience what you mean by that.
It's not something that, unless you're in an esoteric field, you can...
We're talking with Dr. Francesca here, and... I'm very interested in this harmonic change, or for lack of a better term.
Well, some of the people here, other lecturers, are calling it the interdimensional shift. My contacts back 30 years ago called it the frequency change. It's the same thing. We are moving from this third dimension in which we live into a fourth and fifth dimensional state. That's what I mean by the frequency change.
Well, what will the world be like in the fourth and fifth dimension?
It should be like paradise, with no more wars, no more hatred, no more killings, no more greed and envy and money, no more monetary system.
So you're pretty optimistic that things are going to get a little better.
We can only hang on that long, yes.
And what are the space people tell you about this? That do they think we can hang on or not?
Well, they say that some of the most recent communications I got a few weeks ago, they say that we've got to muster up every bit of self-discipline and positivity that we can, because many people are experiencing depression, feelings of uselessness, hopelessness. We are like, some of us, I know I've experienced it, feel like a yo-yo. One day we feel up and everything's okay, and the next day we're down. It's almost like being bipolar.
Now, we're are these space people from?
Many of them are coming from the interdimensional or fourth dimensional level of other planets in our system. They are not coming from the physical level like we are. And some of them are coming from the Pleiades, like the Billy Meyer case. Some of them are coming from other planets, like the Carlos Dias case.
the interesting thing with these communications, as you say, are telepathic. Is there a way that you get attached to certain individuals, or is this kind of it's an overall message from something?
Oh, I have very definite names and communicators that work with me.
For Francesca, I'm afraid our time is up. It's been very interesting. And folks, thanks for listening to the UFO Files. This hour coming from Loughlin, Nevada. Until next time, cheers.